From his seat by the fireplace in the library, Hercule Poirot looked at the assembled company. His eyes passed thoughtfully over Susan, sitting upright, looking vivid and animated, over her husband, sitting near her, his expression rather vacant and his fingers twisting a loop of string. They went on to George Crossfield, debonair and distinctly pleased with himself, talking about card sharpers on Atlantic cruises, to Rosamond, who said mechanically, "How extraordinary, darling, but why?" in a completely uninterested voice. Went on to Michael, with his very individual type of haggard good looks and his very apparent charm. To Helen, poised and slightly remote. To Timothy, comfortably settled in the best armchair, with an extra cushion at his back. And Maud, sturdy and thick-set, in devoted attendance. And finally, to the figure sitting with a tinge of apology just beyond the range of the family circle, the figure of Miss Gilchrist, wearing a rather peculiar, dressy blouse. Presently, he judged, she would get up, murmur her excuse, and leave the family gathering and go up to her room. Miss Gilchrist, he thought, knew her place. She had learned it the hard way. Hercule Poirot sipped his after-dinner coffee and between half-closed lids made his appraisal. He had wanted them there all together, and he had got them. And what, he thought to himself, was he going to do with them now? He felt a sudden, weary distaste for going on with the business. Why was that, he wondered? Was it the influence of Helen Abernethy? There was a quality of passive resistance about her that seemed unexpectedly strong. Had she, while apparently graceful and unconcerned, managed to impress her own reluctance upon him? She was averse to this raking up of the details of old Richard's death, he knew that. She wanted it left alone, left to die out into oblivion. Poirot was not surprised by that. What did surprise him was his own disposition to agree with her. Mr. Entwistle's account of the family had, he realized, been admirable. He had described all these people shrewdly and well. With the old lawyer's knowledge and appraisal to guide him, Poirot had wanted to see for himself. He had fancied that, meeting these people intimately, he would have a very shrewd idea, not of how and when, those were questions with which he did not propose to concern himself, murder had been possible. That was all he needed to know. But of who? For Hercule Poirot had a lifetime of experience behind him, and as a man who deals with pictures can recognize the artist, so Poirot believed he could recognize a likely type of the amateur criminal who will, if his own particular need arises, be prepared to kill. But it was not to be so easy, because he could visualize almost all of these people as a possible, though not a probable, murderer. George might kill as the cornered rat kills. Susan, calmly, efficiently, to further a plan. Gregory, because he had that queer, morbid streak which discounts and invites, almost craves, punishment. Michael, because he was ambitious and had a murderer's cocksure vanity. Rosamond, because she was frighteningly simple in outlook. Timothy, because he had hated and resented his brother, and had craved the power his brother's money would give. Maud, because Timothy was her child, and where her child was concerned, she would be ruthless. Even Miss Gilchrist, he thought, might have contemplated murder if it could have restored to her the willow tree in its ladylike glory. And Helen? He could not see Helen as committing murder. She was too civilized, too removed from violence, and she and her husband had surely loved Richard Abernethy. Poirot sighed to himself. There were to be no shortcuts to the truth. Instead, he would have to adopt a longer but a reasonably sure method. There would have to be conversation, much conversation, for in the long run, either through a lie or through truth, people were bound to give themselves away. He had been introduced by Helen to the gathering, and had set to work to overcome the almost universal annoyance caused by his presence, a foreign stranger, in this family gathering. He had used his eyes and his ears, he had watched and listened openly and behind doors, he had noticed affinities, antagonism, the unguarded words that arose as always when property was to be divided. He had engineered adroitly tete-a-tetes, walks upon the terrace, and had made his deductions and observations. He had talked with Miss Gilchrist about the vanished glories of her tea-shop, and about the correct composition of brioche and chocolate eclairs, and had visited the kitchen garden with her to discuss the proper use of herbs in cooking. He had spent some long half-hours listening to Timothy, talking about his own health, and about the effect upon it of paint. Paint, Poirot frowned. Somebody else had said something about paint. Mr. Entwistle?